You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
As I said before, this is the last week of our Family Pictures series, and we're going to kind of tie up everything that we've looked at. We started 2 months ago, at the beginning of May, and talked about how families are messy. Your family is messy. Things don't go the way you plan. Your kids don't obey. Your marriage didn't work out the way you wanted it to. And you, man, you suck. Your families are just messed up. But then we took some time to look at Scripture, and you're lucky if you can find one family in Scripture that is not messed up too. And it shows us that God is full of grace. Even though things are not going the way we hope, that we've got a God that says, look, I know you can't do it, and that's why I can. And then we looked at some different other things. We talked about issues. One week we looked at, on Mother's Day, we talked to the dads about, you know, if you want to be a man, it's not about just giving your wife stuff. It's about being godly. It's about giving godliness, not just gifts. And then we talked a little bit about, with some couple weeks, about kids. And we talked about discipline and how discipline is a good thing because you're not doing it just for now. It's for that later because God gives you responsibility, has given you responsibility for the future of your kids. And we talked about obedience and the importance of that. And we talked about something else, and they're not adding up, so I'm missing one. And then last week we talked about, I talked to the moms, to the ladies, about, you know, what defines beauty. And it's not all about the outward stuff. It's about the heart. And again, there was one more topic I talked about in there. And it'll come to me eventually. And out of the blue, I'll pull it out. But this week, I want to wrap all of that up by talking about this and this. Because when you're born, which happens to all of you, obviously, right out of the womb, you're not using something like this. But as you get to be in your, I don't know, like what, 1.5? Is that about this age for something like this? When you get to be about 1.5, 2 years old, you get something like this. And I was looking for another kind of walker, and Natalie pointed out that apparently they're illegal these days because kids are, like, going off steps and dying. And not that that's funny, but anyway, things are different. But anyway, this kind of a walker, it would help a child, a small child, learn to walk. And they get up and they hold on the end and they, you know, toddle around and do their little thing and look all cute and then fall over and smack their heads and we smile like, oh, that's cute. Now, as you go through life, you know, you start from here and you grow up, you mature, perhaps. Physically, you mature. And you get bigger and you get older. And we talked last week about this beauty, this picture of beauty, and how, you know, that's not going to last because you get to this point where, you know, everything's perfect and then everything starts to sag and shrivel and you get a little bit older. And then you need one of these. And you use one of these to get around. And you know, while we laugh at someone that falls off of that, you don't laugh when someone falls off of this, okay? That's just cruel. Unless it's on America's Funniest Home Videos, then it's okay for some reason. But anyway, but you've got a, you know, you begin your life on this kind of walker, on a baby walker, and you end your life on this kind of walker. The question is, what is happening in between? What is going on in between? Because someday, well, one day you were already born. That happened. You can't change that. Someday, you are going to have an elderly walker, and you're going to go beyond that point, and you're going to die. And so the question is, especially when we talk about family, what are you going to leave behind? What is going to be behind when you go from walker to walker? What is going to happen? What in that span of time, what are you doing so that when you're gone, there's going to be something left behind? What is legacy? What is that all about? What is the future going to be all about? And I think, you know, for the most part, somewhere in our life, we think about that. You know, someday I'm going to be gone. What am I going to leave to my kids? What are my grandchildren going to say about me? You know, what are they going to say about me years from now, generations from now? Are they even going to know who I am? And so we talk about this, and some of it's a very practical financial, like, you know, I don't want to leave my kids without anything. And so we talk about an inheritance and our estate and making sure, you know, we've got good life insurance and making sure that we're making enough money. And we'll talk about all that stuff in a little bit. And then other times it's just about, you know, our name. I want to be revered. Maybe someday they'll make a plaque about me, or maybe they'll put me in stone and I'll be like that. And some people will come and see my statue and say, wow, look at that. There's that guy. And so when we think about this idea of legacy, of the future, when it comes to family, man, this is a big deal, right? Because nobody else, I mean, generally, people, your kids care about you. Your grandkids care about you. And if you don't have any yet, they will. You know, your family cares probably more about you than most anybody else. And so what are you going to leave behind? And it all comes down to what you're doing between the walkers. It all comes down to how you're living between those two things. And so I want to give you this idea, and then we're going to break it down. We're going to look at a long passage today, and I want to tell a little story to you from Scripture. But this is the idea that I want you to understand. This is the point for this week, is that the legacy that you leave, okay, whatever that is, legacy being what is left when you are gone, the legacy that you leave will be in proportion to, okay, the amount, the greatness of your legacy, whatever, the largeness of it will be in proportion to the God you glorify. Your legacy is going to be completely connected to how much God is glorified between the walkers. And we'll talk about that as we go on. But I want you to understand that it's not about a lot of other things. It's going to be about God and what you're doing between there that's going to give Him glory. That is what's going to last. The more glory you give, the greater legacy you will have. The less, the less. So understand that. But I want you guys to turn to Joshua chapter 4. And if you have your... And no, I don't get paid for this. They don't give me kickbacks. But if you don't have a Bible, you can go to YouVersion.com or the YouVersion app that usually says Bible on the Google Play Store or the iTunes App Store. But Joshua chapter 4, and it's a long passage, and so if you don't have a Bible, some of it's going to be on the screen, but not all of it. I'm going to do a little bit of skimming. But I want to give you a chance to get there, because like I said, there's a lot. We there? Lights are slowly coming on. All right. Now, before I read, I want to set up what's going on here. Okay? If you are here... I believe it was during, it was during our I God series. We talked about I Will and God's faithfulness a couple months back. And one of the things we talked about is that sometimes God is waiting for us to act before He comes through on His promise. And I shared the story of the Israelites at the River Jordan. And the River Jordan was at flood stage. I mean, we're not talking about like a little trickle. We're talking about crazy Ivan-esque, you know, obviously just a couple days ago was the 40th anniversary of Hurricane Agnes, there we go, of Agnes. And you know, it was a major problem for Mifflin County, for Lewistown area. This is what we're talking about here. So this river was at flood stage, the Jordan River. And God said, look, I'm going to take you across to the land that I've promised you. He promised, and next month we're going to get all of this. You'll understand it all completely now, then. But He says, I promised you this land. He promised it to Abraham. And He says, look, it's now time. It's time to go into the land, but the first thing you're going to need to do is cross this river at flood stage. And so what He said is, He didn't say, look, here's what I'm going to do. Just hang out for a while and suddenly the water will stop and then you'll get to go across. No, He didn't do it that way. He said, I want the priests who are carrying the Ark of the Covenant, which had the Ten Commandments in it, some other things. I want them to step into that raging flood. And as soon as they step in, then I'm going to do something. And they did. They step, they put their foot right into that, and instantly God stopped the water, and it says that they walked through on dry ground. So that is what just happened in chapter 3 of Joshua. The people crossing the Jordan River. It was a pretty impressive thing. You know, a generation earlier, their parents crossed the Red Sea in a similar fashion, where God parted the Red Sea there. But that is what just happened. So picking up on verse 1, that's why it makes sense here. He says, "Now, when the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan," okay, so they just crossed the Jordan River, "the Lord said to Joshua, 'Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe,'" because there were 12 tribes of Israel, they were the different family groups. He says, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests stood, and to carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you will stay tonight." So he tells them to pick up 12 stones from the middle of the river, because the priests are still standing there. As long as they're in the river, the water is stopped. And he says, "Pick up 12 stones," and I'll just continue to read on. He says, "So Joshua called together the 12 men he appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe," which math comes out to 12, "and said to them, 'Go over before the ark of the Lord your God in the middle of the Jordan,'" where the priests were, they were holding the ark. He says, "Go to the middle. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of tribes of Israelites, to serve as a sign among you." So he tells them, God tells him, Joshua, this is what I want you to do. Joshua tells the people, "Look, I picked 12 of you. Go to the middle of the river where the priests are, and you're going to pick up a stone." And it says a big stone. It's something they had to put on their shoulder. It wasn't like a little pebble. Like, nee. It was something major. And so these guys got these big stones from the middle of the river. And if you know anything, if you think about this for a second, there's not really much opportunity to get a stone from the middle of a river. You know, especially not back then. Not, you know, 2,500 years ago, 3,500 years ago. Today you could use tools and pull out a big stone. But then, you know, this was something major because the river was dry. And so he says, "Get 12 huge stones from the middle of this river." And he says, "Go over before the ark." Okay. He says, "There will be a sign among you." Then he goes on and says, "In the future, when your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever." It says, goes on, "So now you had God tell Joshua, Joshua tells the people," verse 8, "So the Israelites did as Joshua commanded them. They took 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, according to the number of tribes of Israel." If you haven't figured it out now, a little repetitive. "According to the number of tribes of the Israelites, as the Lord had told Joshua, and they carried them over with them to their camp, where they put them down." And then it says, "Joshua also set up 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they are there to this day." So, two things are happening, and this needs to be clarified. If you look at your footnote in your Bible, it'll probably say on verse 9 there that Joshua also set up 12 stones. So Joshua had 12 guys take out a rock each, okay, 12 big stones. And then it says Joshua took 12 more stones, and right in the middle of the river, he stacked these stones up. Okay, which again, is kind of an unusual thing if you see later, if the river's flowing, there's a stack of rocks in the middle of the river. You know, it's very like Easter Island, Stonehenge kind of thing. It's not a very normal sight. And so that is what happened. Joshua stacked them up, and it says, and they are there to this day. So at the time of writing, there was still a stack of stones in the middle of the Jordan River. Meanwhile, there are 12 separate stones on the other side. And then I'm going to skip a little bit here and just kind of summarize. Basically, it says the priests were there. God says, okay, everybody's across. There were a lot of them. It said just 40,000 of them were armed for battle, and there were many, many more. And it says they crossed over. He says, okay, now everybody's over. Priests come out of the water. As soon as they stepped out of the water with the ark, the river started rushing like a raging flood again. And so they got through onto the other side and basically did everything that God told them to do. And so I'm going to pick up at verse 19. All right, so moving on to verse 19. It says, "On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho." And we all know the story about Jericho, perhaps, if you were in church. The walls came tumbling down, all that. That's going to happen in the next chapter. But they're camping right outside of Jericho. They are inside this land now, because the Jordan River was the border. They are in the land that God had promised to Abraham generations earlier. And they went up and camped there. And Joshua, in verse 20, set up at Gilgal the 12 stones that they had taken out of the Jordan. So he set them up. He stacked them up somehow in some sort of a monument, of a large tower. And again, 12 of these would be fairly significant. They might have been bigger. I don't know. Maybe they're not as awesomely big and huge as I am. Maybe they're a little bit bigger than that, so they could carry bigger stones. But he stands them up, and he says to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan just what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. So do you understand what's going on in the story? I think I've broken it down enough. They cross the Jordan River, pick up 12 huge stones in the middle, set them up on inside the Promised Land, this stack that's there to this day, not now today, but to the time it was written. There's a huge pile of stones, and they say, when your kids see them, and they ask, what's that all about? You can say, this is a reminder to us of when God let us cross the Jordan River. And when we crossed the Jordan River, it was dry ground. And it was something that only God could do to demonstrate that He was powerful and that He is amazing. So let me just to kind of break this down, get us to understand exactly what's going on. There are three things, because I'm a pastor, there's three things that this passage says, as I see it. First of all, there was a moment. There was an incredible moment. There was a God moment, a God-sized thing. Something happened. And the happened thing in this particular situation was that God stopped the Jordan River at flood stage and the whole nation crossed over on dry ground. That is not something that normally happens. That is something extraordinary where God said, look, I am God. I am awesome. Which he's allowed to say that. He says, and he did something. And so that in verse 1, you see that moment. It says, the Israelites had then crossed over the Jordan on dry ground. And again, when we talked about the I God series, and when I talked about God's faithfulness, we looked at this idea of God's power and how God can do some amazing, incredible things. And so here he did something amazing and incredible. And one of the things that happens is that in our lives, there are a lot of God moments. There are a lot of amazing things that God does. And then, you know, again, you're not like, hey, I'm going fishing on the Juniata and you step into the river and all of a sudden it stops. I'm not talking about that, which would be cool and awesome or crazy weird. I'm not sure what it would be. And you'd have a lot of people upset. So don't do that with an ark, okay? But there are these moments where God comes through in a way when you're like, man, I don't know how this is going to work out. And God shows up. And there's that God moment. There's a time where it's like, oh, man, how am I going to get through this week? And you look back and you think, wow, that whole week God did some incredible things. And sometimes they're huge. It's like, this is an incurable disease and God cures it. And sometimes they're little. God, I just need some peace from these kids. And then that afternoon, it turns out it was a very peaceful afternoon. And so God is doing stuff. God is always doing stuff. God is always, always, always doing stuff. And so here, you had this moment, and I encourage you, what is God doing in your life? What are those moments where God has come through? Because we are so quick to forget them. One of the things we do at our elders meeting every month is we start out with God moments. What are the God moments of MC3? What are the stories that we're hearing? What have we seen God do? What have we heard from other people? Like, wow, God did this in my life, or this came through, or now I changed this idea, or whatever. What are some of those crazy, amazing moments where God does stuff? And so we share them, and it is awesome. It is incredible just being able to see and reflect on, wow, God is doing some great stuff. And actually, in our last month's meeting, we kind of joked. We're like, I don't know, what have you guys seen this month? And we kind of came to this conclusion that, like, God is doing so much that we kind of miss it now. It's like, oh, well, he always does that. Of course he's part of the Jordan. Duh. And we kind of just stepped back and said, okay, wait a second. A few months ago, we would have been like, this is awesome. And now we're like, God does it all the time. So we had to step back and say, yeah, there's a God moment there. And so I just want to encourage you, and this isn't really where I'm going necessarily, but in your life, when you have those moments, remember them. Capture them. Take them and say, yes, look what God did. And if it's something as simple as, God, thank you that I didn't drive through that intersection when that car ran the red light. That's a God moment. Just to reflect on the fact that God is doing stuff all the time. And sometimes it doesn't even go the way we like it. And then we back up later and we're like, wow, if God hadn't done that, man, I don't know where I would be now. So remember those God moments. Where do you notice? Do you see God at work? The second thing, and this is how you can remember them, is that God did something amazing. There was a God moment, and then God told the people, set up a marker. This is going to be a marker. There's going to be an object lesson, a memorial, a milestone, a thing that will help you remember the God moment. And so he told the Israelites, he says, go out into the river and get a rock. A rock, not Iraq, which is different, although they were not too far away. But he says, get a rock from the river as a reminder. He says, I want you to get something. Pick it up, have one of each tribe so that you know everybody's represented here, and bring these rocks to Gilgal, where we camp, on the bank of the Jordan River there. And so there was this marker. And in the passage, it says some really cool things. It says that this should be a, what verse is that? In verse 7, God says to Joshua, it says, these stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. And so this was a marker, and the word memorial, it's just a Hebrew word that means a reminder, a rememberator. Okay, it was something to help them remember what God did. And so kind of in your life too, just what are the moments that God has done something? And then take some time just to mark that moment. And maybe it's something like, hey, here's a rock. You know, you're going to make a collection of rocks. And actually, again, in this week in your HEU pack, you have an opportunity to do that with your family. Maybe it's just a little journal and you write down, wow, look what God did. My grandparents used to do this thing where they had a jar and it was on their fridge. And anytime God answered a prayer request, they would write it down and stick it in this jar. And every New Year's Eve, they would dump the jar out and look at all the things that God did over the past year. And it was huge, you know, and little things like, I forgot about that. So just kind of, I want to encourage you, make markers. Take the time to say, God has done something, and just set it aside. Maybe it's we're modern people. Maybe you journal it in your online app or something like that, where you've got a way to remember what's going on. And so God knew what he was doing, because here's the thing about this marker. It wasn't just something where God's like, okay, take a rock and, you know, put it away somewhere or put it in your pocket or whatever, which people have done that too. They'll carry something around as a reminder. But he says, I want you to set it up on the edge of this promised land. And God knew he's fulfilling his promise to the people. And I'll just leave it at that. He made a promise and now he's coming through on that promise. And so people were going to be in this land. They were going to be walking around. They were going to be with their kids, having a stroll on the banks of the Jordan, you know, going out there with their sunglasses and hanging out to get a suntan. And the kids would be like, Dad, what's that all about? Oh, let me tell you a story about great-great-grandpa. And so that was a reminder that this pile of rocks stood as a marker for God doing something amazing. So that's what it was. It was a God thing. It was a God thing that God did. And so, again, what are the markers that you have? Do you find ways to mark those moments? That doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be big rocks. Maybe it will be big rocks. And we're like, oh, go to your house. Oh, okay, I got you. It's like a big pile and stuff. Anyway, the third thing there, and this is the key. There was a moment where God did something. There was that marker that was a reminder. But then there was the message. The message. The message was the key. Because this was them saying, okay, once they saw the reminder, once the descendants, once the kids and grandkids, whatever, saw this marker, saw this pile of stones, they were then to tell them a story. They were to share with them what God did. And that's what it says in the passage here. It says, tell them what God is in verse. Again, it's a long passage. Forgive me for a moment. Verse 21. He says, when in the future, when your descendants ask, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan just as what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the world might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, so that you might always fear the Lord your God. See, it was not about them. This marker, this pile, this stone thing wasn't so they could say, yeah, aren't we awesome? Aren't we great? We are like the coolest nation ever. That wasn't the idea. It was so they could say, yeah, that was when God did something incredible. That was there. That pile was there, Sonny, because great-great-grandpapa was part of God doing an amazing thing. And so that was the legacy. That was the issue where they said, from this point to this point, from walker to walker, it wasn't about how awesome Israel was, because Israel was nothing without God. And again, in the next month, we're going to talk about the 10 plagues, the 10 commandments. We're going to talk about the different people that were involved. We're going to talk about creation and all this stuff. And all that's about God. It wasn't about the Israelites. It was God saying, and I don't know how this works, but God said, I choose you, Abraham, and your descendants. And from that point on, it wasn't about Abraham and his descendants. It was about what God was doing through them. And so it's that's the idea, that this marker wasn't just a, hey, this is good to have. It was something to be a reminder. And the there's two different phrases here. In verse 7, Joshua says, when your children ask, what do these stones mean? In verse 7, he says, tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off. And then later, which I just read, he said, when your descendants ask, what do these stones mean? Tell them. And there's two different words that are used, two different Hebrew words that are used and translated tell. The first word is, and I'll get this right here, is amar. Amar. And it means, or maybe it's like, amar, because I'm not Hebrew. But this word means to say, to speak, a spoken word. And I just want to throw this out to all of you. And I'm not just talking about moms and dads and grandparents and grandparents, aunts and uncles, everybody. There are times where God does stuff in our lives and people will say, what was that all about? And we're like, I'm lucky, I guess. And we miss an opportunity to tell people about God. And that happens. And I don't know if we're afraid of people, which I guess we are. We want to fit in. And there are opportunities all around us where we have an opportunity. I'm not saying be obnoxious and be like, hey, do you want to hear what God did today? No, I don't. I just want to eat my coffee. But there are opportunities that are often presented where we have a chance to tell people about God, to tell people about what God did, and we don't speak up. We make some excuse. We mumble. We change the subject because we don't want to talk about how amazing God is. And in the end, it ends up becoming about how amazing you are, which is not going to last. And we'll get to that in a little bit. And the second Hebrew word is yada, that is used to say, tell your kids, the word for tell. And this is an idea of knowing and understanding and knowledge and depth. So it's not just speak it, because you need to do that. But don't just say, like, God did something, have a good day. He says, tell them, help them understand the depth of what happened then. Help them see that this wasn't an accident. This wasn't a chance thing. This wasn't an, oops, guess God missed that one. This was God showing up. God coming on the scene and saying, I am doing something. I have done something amazing. And he says, get your kids, get your descendants, get everybody to get it. Help them to understand what God did. Help them to get that idea. That's what this idea of the message was all about. God did something, they marked it. But he says, now tell them and get them to understand it. Because the legacy that you leave will be in proportion to the God you glorify. It wasn't about Israel. I would be willing to bet, well, I can't say that because Scripture is Scripture. But, okay, I have to stay true to my theology, so I can't say what I was about to say. But, God doesn't, well, let me just put it this way, God doesn't need us. And if we start making stuff about us and not about Him, He has every right to push us aside. Now, He's full of grace. That's what we talked about the first week. He'll come through and help us out. But it's all about God. It's not about how much you glorify yourself. And I'll explain all that in detail in just a minute. But understand that for this situation, that when God dried up the Jordan River, it was about God. There were markers there. They had this monument built so that people would say, what's that all about? And they could say, that is all about God. It's all about God. And that is what's lasting. That is what made a difference for generation after generation after generation. And look at us here today. Like I said, the Exodus was 1446, 40 years later. So we're talking about 1500 B.C., give or take. 1500 B.C., and here we are at 2012 B.C., A.D. So doing the math, that's like, let's just say 35 and some change. 3,500 years later, 3,500 years later, and we are still talking about the same God. We are still telling the same story. But do you, any of you, tell me the name of that guy that picked up the second stone? Why do you know? Tell me the name of person number four that carried it across. And remember the other guy that hurt his back carrying the stone, had to be carried around the chariot for the rest of the week? No, you don't. But you remember the God that did something amazing. I mean, I could even ask you, like, tell me the name of your great-great-great-grandfather. Chances are you couldn't. You know, maybe you could break out Ancestry.com and be like, but chances are you couldn't because you don't know their names. And someday, people are going to forget you. They're not going to know who you are. They're not going to remember you. But if you are focusing on God and not yourself, they're going to remember something incredible. So, let's talk about how this looks. What a legacy that lasts. First of all, there's three things here that legacy can't be about. If you want a legacy that lasts, it's about God. It can't be about you. It can't be about you. And I know this sounds like the three things I'm going to share here sound kind of unlike everybody around us. You know, it can't be about you. If you're concerned about how people will remember you when you're gone, you've already missed it. If you are concerned about how people will remember you when you are gone, you have already missed it. And I'm talking now. So whether you're at this end of the walker or you're at this end of the walker, if you're worried about what people are going to think about you when you're beyond the walker, you've already missed it. It's too late unless you'd make some changes. Because you aren't going to last. You're going to get old and die and be gone, and someday they're not going to remember you. But if you're making it about God, if you're making it about what Christ has done in your life, then that'll go on forever. And what really matters? That people remember, oh yeah, I remember 67,000 years ago, great-great-grandpa Kirk. You know, like, oh, great. But wouldn't you prefer, I mean, not that you want everybody to remember Kirk, but in your own life, like, honestly, would you rather people remember you or because of God in your life, they know Jesus? What's going to matter more? So, it can't be about you. You know, one of the things, well, I'm out to make a name for myself. It's not going to work. If you're trying to make a name for yourself, your name is going to be gone someday. How many of you guys are enjoying the fact that you're sitting right now? Comfy chairs, yeah, you know. Some of you might want to be standing. All right, you're sitting. Do you remember the name of the guy that invented the foam chair? No? But you're enjoying it. Somebody did something. You don't even know the name. And here you all sitting week after week after week on chairs. Because somebody did something. And it's not about that person. It was about the chair. Well, let's break it. Let's make it bigger here. Do you want people to remember you or remember God? Let's put it this way. Francis Chan has a great illustration. Let's say you go out of town for a few months. Okay, you're out of town for a few months. You come back into Mifflin County and you're like, guys, I was in Hollywood for the last few months. And I filmed a movie. I was in a movie. And I'm the star. Okay, this is so awesome. I'm the star of a movie. And so you say, look, guys, I'm going to rent the biggest place I know. Which would be Mifflin County High School. You rent Mifflin County High School and you invite, hey, tell your friends about it. Because you got a local who's a movie star. I'm a movie star. And so they all come and it's like, okay, now we're going to show the film. And you get up front and say, hey, well, I want to thank you all for coming. I appreciate you being here. I will do autographs afterwards. My agent is over here and he'll work with you if you have any issues, if you want to book me for future engagements. And, well, let's just roll film. And you roll the film, and it starts, and awesome opening credits, and you know, Tom Cruise, and Tom's dead, isn't he? well, it was crazy awesome technology edit. And so Dom DeLuise and Tom Cruise, and you go on, and the movie starts, and it's a good movie. Excellent, you know, John Williams wrote the soundtrack, and all sorts of cool technology, and you know, this plot is amazing. And then about, like, I don't know, 47 minutes and 13 seconds, somebody walks by the camera like that, you know, just like that. And you're like, there, you see it? That was my head! That was my head! That was my head! Thank you all for coming. I am the star of this movie. And you'd be like, what are you talking about? You're loco! Because no, the movie isn't about you, it's about Tom and Dom. You know, Tom and Dumber. Anyway, it's not about you. It's about someone else. And if we walk into our lives, if we try to make a name for ourselves, if we try to make a legacy, excuse me, pedals, a legacy that's about us, then we've missed it. Because it's not about us. It's about God doing something in us. It's about God doing something through us. And so if you're trying to make your legacy about you, if you're trying to say, look, I'm so proud of my family. I'm glad that I've got such a wonderful family. And generations from now, I want people to remember me. That is not going to last. Because it's not about you. It's about God. Your legacy needs to be about Him and about what He is doing. So is your legacy movie about you? Is it about your projects? Oh, yeah. Sven Slithnikogin, great Uncle Sven, he was a great man because he learned how to make a mouse so you could turn it upside down. They put an app on iTunes that went crazy. No? Is it about your success? Is it about your accomplishments? Do you want people to know how great you were? Oh, yeah, I remember Aunt Carla. Man, she did so many wonderful things. And I'm not saying Carla doesn't do wonderful things. I mean, we really appreciate her. But you know what I'm saying? Is that what it's about? Is it about your accomplishments? Oh, I'm going to do more. And so we keep working harder so that we can make a bigger name for ourselves when it's not even about you in the first place. It's got to be about God. Because the legacy you leave is going to be in proportion to the God you glorify. If you want to leave something that's going to last, make it about Jesus. Make it about God. The second thing is that your legacy cannot be about your stuff. And this is another thing. You start talking about legacy. You start talking about, you know, you're getting to this end of the Walker spectrum. And you start thinking about your will. You start thinking about, what am I going to leave behind? What am I going to offer? And we make it about our estate. And so sometimes we work harder. We earn more money so that we can leave more to our kids. And in the process, we're leaving them with nothing because we're not leaving them with what matters. And yeah, wow, Junior is going to get an inheritance of $6.3 million. But when he dies, there's nothing because he doesn't know Jesus. Because he didn't see Jesus in you. Because you were making it about the $6.3 million. Because you were making it about the house you were going to leave behind. About that super awesome restored car that they're going to get. But they didn't see God in your life, and so it's not going to matter. You can't be about your stuff. It can't be about your things. They're not going to last. They're going to fall apart. They're going to decay. They're going to break down. I don't need to tell you that. We've talked about that enough in here. That things aren't going to last. They're going to be gone. You know, when my grandmother died, 4 years ago, something like that. And I remember we all went down just prior to, she had cancer and it went pretty quickly. Right just prior to when she died, we all went down to her place in Florida. It was me and my brother and my parents. And we were looking at her stuff. And literally, we were down, like, she had a storage area down in the basement of where she lived. And there were boxes full of things. And we're just like, how about you? You can get that, and you can get that, and you can get that. All right, you can get that. Oh, I don't really want that. Okay, well, I'll trade you this for that. Okay, you can have that. And I don't know. I mean, we got some stuff. But I wonder, and Nana wasn't there. She was up in her apartment in her bed. And I just wonder what kind of stuff that we treated as like, oh, I don't want that. Well, I don't want it either. I guess I'll take it. Why don't we just put that, give it the goodwill. And who knows, you know, as we're all sitting here doing this, that might have been, that my girl went to Europe. Who knows if, you know, that was given to me by the Queen of England. And that would certainly make a difference, wouldn't you think? You know, even if it's a piece of junkiness, and if the Queen, there's something significant about that. But here we are, a generation later, and I'm sure it was significant to her, but goodwill gets it. And that's the thing about things. That's the thing about stuff. Is that, you know, it's not even if you do give something that you want somebody to have, they might probably won't appreciate it the way you did. And so you're leaving something that's going to fall apart, it's going to get old, it's going to break down, and probably isn't going to be even appreciated the way that person appreciated, the way you appreciated. I mean, I could give you, and I've got books. You saw my pop-up guide to the galaxy last week for Star Wars. That's one of about six or seven in my multi-volume collection of Star Wars knowledge books. And I know one person in here cares about that. Oh, two. I got two. Okay. But the rest of you, oh, three. Okay, I got heads nod. That's like an auction here. Four. All right. Anyway, yeah. But for most of you, you're like, why would I want one, nay, eight books on every location in the Mos Espa system? And Mos Espa actually is a city. But anyway, why would you want all that stuff? Because it's worthless to you. But to me, it was valuable. And if I left that to you, you'd be like, great. Good, now I can start the fire next week. You know, like, do you understand? If you're making it about your stuff, it's not going to last. It's got to be about God. It's got to be about God in you. And if you want to use your stuff and say, look what I gave away and I did this for the sake of God's kingdom, that's different because that's going to last. But it's when it comes down to your stuff and your inheritance, your estate, it's not going to matter. What matters is God. And I'll just confess to you, you know, it's actually been about a year now that MC3 has kind of started, kind of stumbling through the summer, meeting in here without, well, nothing like it is now. And I remember, you know, one of the things that was always at the forefront of my mind, and it probably still is that, you know, I want to make sure if we're going to do something for somebody, make sure they know it's from MC3. You know, make sure they know. If you're going to go help your neighbor do something, let them know that you go to MC3. And you know, on one side, there's a lot of opinion out there about church. People hate church. People are tired of fake church people. People are tired of churches that say they care but don't. And so I guess part of that is I do want to try to change that impression. But is it really all about getting our name out there, or is it about doing what Jesus has called us to do? And that's where I'm wrong. That's where I need to say, hey, whoa. It's about serving people in the name of Jesus. It's not about getting our logo on it. So, and don't be like, oh, your logo's on something. We can't. You understand my point. But it can't be about stuff. The last thing is that your legacy can't be about your goodness. From walker to walker, you might be a really good person. You might have done some really good things. You might have gone to church every day of your life. Or every Sunday of your life, every week of your life. You might have been a person that was just so kind that everybody loved to talk to you. You might have been the kind of person that man, you just gave a dollar to the kids when you saw a kid. You always had lollipops. And none of those things are bad. Okay, I understand that. We are called to serve others. We are called to live like Jesus. But if they don't understand the why behind the what that you do, then it's wasted. Because what you'll have next is that, well, you know, I remember watching my dad, and he always gave lollipops to kids, so I guess that's what it's all about. And so giving, you know, everywhere I go, I give lollipops to kids, and somehow we think that giving lollipops to kids, that's going to get me into heaven, because that's what my parents did. And if they don't understand that, hey, I'm giving lollipops to kids because I care about them, and Jesus wants me to care for people. Or maybe you don't give them lollipops to kids because of cavities, I don't know. But maybe give them toothbrushes, okay? But if they don't understand why behind what's going on, if they think it's just because you're a good person and they try to imitate that, it's not going to last. They need to see that Jesus is the reason that you're doing that. If they just imitate you and they don't get it, that this is because of Jesus, then they're missing out. It's not about your goodness. It's about Christ's goodness in you. And that's what's going to last. That's what's going to make a difference. And you've probably heard this illustration. I probably have shared it with you guys before. There's a story about a lady making a roast. And I was just reminded about it last week. About a lady making a pot roast. And she was showing her daughter how to do it. And so it was time. They're in the kitchen. They cooked it. And then right before that, well, before they cooked it, she got it out of the container, unwrapped it, you know, seasoned it and all that. And then she took a big knife and cut off the ends of the pot roast. And she then put it in the pan to put it in the oven. And she's like, well, I guess it's, anyway. She said, why do you do that, Mom? She said, well, I don't know. My mom always taught me that that's the way you're supposed to do it. And so they would take those ends and, of course, throw them out and not use them. And she's like, you know, that's a really good question. Let's go to your grandma and ask her. Hey, Grandma, you know, I was helping little Susie make pot roast and we cut the ends off and we were wondering, why did you teach me how to do that? And she says, well, I don't know. I learned it from my mom. So let's call Great-Grandma. So they call Great-Grandma and says, Great-Grandma, you know, why was it that you cut the ends off of your pot roast and then threw them away before you put it in? And she said, what do you mean? She said, well, every time we make pot roast, we cut the ends off and throw them away. And she said, well, the reason I did that was my pan was too small. It never fit. And so I had to cut the ends off and throw them away to get it to fit into my pan. And so here you have generations later following the same thing, not realizing the reason behind it. And sometimes we can do the same thing. If our kids don't see Jesus in us, but just see good things in us, they're going to miss it. And it's not going to be a lasting legacy. It can't be about you. It can't be about your stuff. It can't be about your goodness. I mean, God help us if we pass along a bunch of good deeds to our kids and that's all they see. Because just as good as they are acting, without Jesus, there's no hope. Without Jesus, there is hell. So I would much rather passing along something that lasts. And so between these two things, that's what's going to matter. Is that if you're pointing, here you are at, I don't know, let's go over here. Here you are in your 20s. It's all about God. It's all about God. Here you are in your 30s. It's all about God. It's all about God. 40s. It's all about Jesus. It's all about Jesus and God and what He's doing. 50s. You've had a rough life. Got one hand on the walker already. It's all about Jesus. It's all about Jesus. In your 60s, when you're in the walker, maybe we'll move it down there. 60, you know, it's got to be all about that because that, it's got to be all about Him because that is what's going to matter. That's what's going to last. So the idea is that the legacy that you leave, if you haven't gotten it by now, we're talking about family, we're wrapping all this stuff up. If you think it's about you, if it's about your stuff, if it's about how good you are, you've missed it. It's got to be about how much God is glorified in your life. How much you're pointing people, and I don't mean just your kids, I mean everybody, pointing people around you to Jesus. So that when you die, they might not remember you, but they will remember Jesus. My grandma Grace, our daughter Alethea is named after her. Middle name is Alethea Grace Fitch. She was really old when I met her. She was like 100 when I remember her, my first memories of her. I remember a couple things about Grandma Grace. She always had butterscotches on her table, you know, those little butterscotch things. And she always shocked me when she kissed me. I hated that. I'm serious. We would go visit her and be like, is she going to have to kiss me? And I don't know if she just liked the dry air or what, but like every time she would kiss me, there'd be a shock. And I remember being like, she would always say, what? Who is it? You know, and you probably heard me tell this story a million times, so I won't say it again. But she would always mistake me for my dad, for my uncle, for my grandfather. You know, she never knew who everybody was. But Great-Grandma Grace, when she died, you know, we went to her funeral, and that was all good. I was very young then. I was probably like 6 or 7. You know, vague memories. I remember people showing her shoes in the casket. They're like, aren't they sweet? I made them. Like, that freaks me out. But here's the thing. I have run into people to this day. I still run into people, and they're like, you're a Fitch. I knew your Grandma Grace. She loved Jesus. You know, and I have people say, your Grandma Grace is the reason why I'm a pastor today. Your Grandma Grace, she's the reason that my marriage worked out. And they don't talk about her, but they talk about God in her. They talk about Jesus in her. And that's the legacy that's going to last. That's what's going to matter. It's about what Jesus is doing through you and how you communicate that. This past week, Kirk and I had the opportunity to work in a friend of ours, a family that's going to be moving to the area this coming week, actually. And their kitchen sink wouldn't drain. Like, you would fill it up, and you would just turn on the water normal, and the water would fill way up to the top, and then you'd wait, like, 20 minutes. and it would slowly go down. And so I checked the trap, and people kept emptying out the drywall spackle stuff, and you know who you are. You don't do it in the sink. Anyway, I emptied the trap, cleaned that out, which is the easy part, but it was draining slow. It was draining real slow. So I went down to the basement, and it turned out that there was a cast iron pipe down there. And if you know anything about cast iron, this is the way they made everything. Now, it wasn't this big. This is a 1.5-inch pipe. And I was almost certain, just seeing the cast iron, that that was the reason why the drain was going slow. So I checked it out. A couple days later, Kirk and I went over to the house, got all the right parts. We bought the PVC plumbing and cut out the cast iron to put in a nice new PVC, 1.5-inch drain line. I know that's thrilling to you all. You're like, ooh, tell me more. But when we took it out, right, we cut this pipe out that was making this drain run slow. And it's this big around, about 1.5 inches, not about, exactly 1.5 inches. And inside was about the room for a ballpoint pen to go through. Because all the cast iron had corroded, had rusted. The best part was when we cut it off, and then all that sewer gas, it was like that hot day. All the sewer gas came into the basement, and the ceiling's like this high. It was wonderful. And we got splattered with smooth, we'll just call it sewer smooth. And I didn't even think how, I told Kirk later, I didn't realize how bad I stunk until I went home and got a shower. And I'm like, so that's what clean smells like. Okay, I must have been really stinky. And it was nasty. And so we cut that out. We got rid of that. That is not useful. We put a new pipe in. And, of course, the drain, I think, I haven't checked it since a couple days later. I'm assuming it's still working fine, draining quickly, draining appropriately. And the interesting thing is that cast iron pipes, on them, they have, you can barely see the edge of this one. This is from my basement. We replaced our main sewer line. They have a name stamped in them. And the name that was stamped in this pipe, I wrote it down somewhere. What is it? Oh, this it's broken off, but it would say, the full one says, the Sanitary Company of America. It's stamped right in the cast iron. And the interesting thing is that somebody once upon a time, say probably 50 years ago, put that cast iron pipe in. A company named Sanitary Company of America said, look, we're going to make the pipe that's going to last. It's going to be cast iron, new technology. It's going to be permanent. It's going to be around. And here we are about 50 years later cutting it out because it is nasty. Because it is corroded. It is rusted. It is full of snuff. And it is just, it's not good anymore. But yet they stamped their name on it thinking that it was going to last forever. So people would look at that name and say, yes, Sanitary Company of America. And the funny thing is we replaced it with a pipe that said Charlotte Pipe on it. Because they had their name on it. And they think it's going to last. And those things, after time, wore out and didn't matter. And so even now, if you go down to their basement, you're not going to remember the Sanitary Company of America. You might remember Charlotte Pipe, but in a while you probably won't remember that because they're going to come up with some new like hyperspace magnetic technology where drains are automatically sucked away into the fifth dimension. I don't know. But here's the thing. A lot of us, in our families, with our kids, with our friends, our neighbors, we are busy stamping our name, onto things that won't last, that are full of smich, that are rusted, that are corroded, and that are nasty. And those things aren't going to last. If you want a lasting impression, if you want to leave a legacy, you need to be putting Jesus on everything. So some of you like in your basement writing Jesus on your pipe. It'll last forever now. But you need to put Jesus on everything that you do because that's what's going to last. That's what's going to matter. The band is going to come up. And we're going to close with a song that they kind of gave you a teaser a few minutes ago. And this song is all about legacy. It's all about leaving a legacy. It's all about saying, let us be a generation that seeks God, not a generation that's about us. You know, and who knows? I don't know what your background is like. I don't know what you have been like up till this moment. But you have the opportunity right now, from this point on, to make it about God. To make your legacy about Jesus Christ. To make it about Him and what He has done in your life. So as we sing this, as Kendra shared earlier, you know, songs, worship is a prayer. It's communicating with God. This is a great opportunity for us to sing as a prayer. God, help us to be a generation that seeks You. Help us to feel with clean hands and pure hearts. So would you stand as they lead us in worship?